Hello, and welcome to That Tech Pod, where we discuss all things e-discovery, data privacy, cybersecurity, and tech innovation. I'm Kevin Elmberg, and I feel like I know a decent amount about tech.
And I'm Laura Milstein, and I know probably about 130% more than Kevin about technology, but probably about 250% less than our guest today.
And honestly, that's why each week we are bringing on the heavy hitters in the industry to break down these topics. Laura, who are we talking to today?
Today we are talking to John Trajanic, the founder and CEO of Merlin Search Technologies, which develops AI-powered search software for investigations, discovery, and regulatory compliance. Prior to Merlin, he was founder and CEO of Catalyst Repository Systems, which he sold to OpenText in early 2019. For the first 20 years of his career, he was a trial lawyer and litigation partner at Holland & Hart, a national law firm based in the Rocky Mountains. John is a prolific speaker and writer. Over the past 30 years, he has written 8 books and countless articles on legal technology topics. John, welcome to the show.
Hey, Laura, thanks. I'm excited to be here. I think we're going to have a lot of fun today.
I hope so. If you say it, then I'm going to trust you. So let's get into the fun. So you've been in this industry for forever. I just have to pause there. Can you tell us more? Tell us a bit of your background. And when I say that, I don't even want the whole story. I want to know how you founded Catalyst. You sold it. You made money. And instead of saying, I'm done, I'm going to just like go live on a beach, you were like, let's do something else. What? That's really what I'm saying when I'm asking you to tell us more about yourself. Explain why you're still working.
Well, we got to go back a few years after we sold Catalyst, or almost the day we sold Catalyst. And I looked and I said, I think the next 10 years are going to be more exciting than the last. And there's no way in hell that I'm going to sit them out on a boat or a beach or on the front porch and just tell people who don't want to hear it that, hey, I was part of this at the beginning. I decided I'd rather be part of it in the middle or whatever. I wasn't going to stop because I knew it was going to be more exciting. And frankly, I didn't even know about Gen AI at the time. Now, I don't think anybody has any doubts when I say the next 10 years are going to be a lot more exciting than the last.
So you mentioned Gen AI. Obviously, that's kind of why we're here. Can you, give a brief overview of your Gen AI solution and talk a little bit of how it's different than some of the other players in our space?
Sure. We're on a Gen AI journey. And back when it came out in late November of 22, and certainly early December, Dr. William Weber, who I work daily with, and I took a look at this and said, this is going to change everything. And to be honest, I don't swear that we knew that like the first minute or the first day or the first poem that we did around the Sedona principles or anything goofy like that. But pretty darn quickly, we realized, to the point where we said, we've got to jump in, we've got to turn this ship in the direction of Gen AI and see what it can do. And we started a journey that some thought was crazy, which was to write about it as we went, to speak about it, to tell everybody what we were doing, what worked, etc. In the tech mindset, at least the old days, the thought was stealth. And you see people, LinkedIn, stealth company. So I had people say, don't tell them what you're doing. Keep quiet. And I just generally say to the hell with that. I want to do it my way. And so we started writing, speaking, and went on a journey that is far from finished, but already is blowing people's minds with what we can do with Gen AI. How is it different from the others? I don't sit and study the others. From what I can see, most of the others have caught on to the notion that, well, Gen AI and e-discovery maybe will replace reviewers or review teams, and it will without any doubt. And I tell that to review companies that want to partner with us. It's going to change the game. But review is the easiest part of this equation. It's going to change how we investigate, how we analyze groups of documents, how we figure out what's going on with cases that have millions of documents. And more important was the realization and epiphany that Gen AI alone won't work that magic. You need several kinds of AI. And to put a point on it, you have to have AI that will help you find documents, and then Gen AI to help you analyze. Because Gen AI, by the very nature of its architecture, is not like a search engine, not like Elasticsearch or DT Search, where I can point it at millions of documents. It can index them maybe in 30 minutes or an hour, whatever. And after that, boom, you put in your search and it'll search across them. GenAI can't do that. In fact, it's severely limited in the amount of content that it can analyze at any given moment. It's limited by something we call a context window, or when we're given our talks, we liken it to a whiteboard. And the whiteboard is outside the brain, between us and the brain. We can write on the whiteboard. That's asking our question, our prompt, and it can read the whiteboard and it can write an answer on the whiteboard. But everything has to fit on the whiteboard. And when GenAI started, that whiteboard was severely limited, about 3,000 tokens or 2,500 words without getting too geeky here. That isn't very much.
Right.
And be sure, as the months progressed quickly, the numbers increased to 200,000 and Google's talking about 1 million. Well, 1 million's big. I haven't seen that yet, but it's coming. But it's still limited when you talk about the number of words in e-discovery. So William and I realized that we needed two kinds of AI, a more traditional AI that can index millions and hundreds of millions of documents to bring back relevant ones, and then Gen AI that could analyze the ones that are important. And nobody else is thinking that way. They're just thinking about the review part, which is the easiest part of the equation, but the easy part. We built the hard part first.
John, I got to jump in here. I have a few questions because you just overloaded me with information. You were just like, sit down and learn. And I have been taking notes here. So a few questions. One, AI has been around as a buzzword, not new anymore. And now it's Gen AI, and we're constantly getting a new word and a new buzz. And all these things are also very broad because you could say AI, for example, in the term of an electric vehicle, or AI in the term of an, you know, data analytics tool. It's very different. And when we're talking about Gen AI, there are a lot of people that look around like conversational AI, which is focusing more on human conversations. And then when you're looking at Gen AI, you're focusing more on creating content in various forms. When we're talking about Gen AI, when it comes to e-discovery, what does that mean to you? Can you simplify if someone were to say, what do you mean Gen AI in e-discovery?
When I talk to people in a review company, I start out this way. I say, you guys are not going to like me very much because Gen AI is going to take all your jobs, or at least most of them. It's going to wipe out the review business. Gut it. It doesn't mean there'll be no humans, but a small group of smart humans who understand some sampling and a little bit of how the system works will do the work of a large group in a fraction of the time and a fraction of the cost. Review itself is $10+ billion today. And when I tell investors about that big market, you'd think I'd say 10 going to 30. No, I say, how would you like to take a $10+ billion market and make it a $3+ billion market using Gen AI? So that's not the only way it's going to affect discovery. But I look at people and they're very nervous. And I say, listen, this train is coming, whether we like it or not. And the only real choice you have is, do you want to get up in one of the front cars where the cushions are soft and the drinks are free? And maybe you have a shot at directing the train, or do you want to be back in the caboose? And frankly, I hold back to say, or laying on the tracks. So what is Gen AI going to do to e-discovery? Well, the simplest and most obvious, it's going to wipe out the review business. But it's not just that. Suppose I were to show you that I have a site with 2.7 million documents on it, that we could take a difficult topic, one that would be hard to come up with the proper keywords for, but we could use traditional machine learning to find, let's say, 300 relevant documents, and then Gen AI to analyze and report on all of them to tell you what's going on, what the issues are, who the key people are, a timeline, and anything else. And we could do that in minutes. At Legal Week, I did the whole thing in under 7 minutes and seeing a full analysis in that speed. How will that change investigations? I think you can probably imagine. what if I could show you 1,000+ pages of complex medical records that were summarized by a nurse who came to us to see what this could do? And we loaded it in, and she said, what ribs did this patient break? And boom, the left anterior 4 through 6 and 2 on the right. She then said to me, was this patient on oxygen before the accident? And I type in the question. And while I'm doing it, she says, I summarized these records and I couldn't find any information on that. She was on oxygen afterwards, but not before. And boom, this system comes up not only with answers, what she was on, when she was on it, with links to all the parts of the medical records showing what she was on.
Back in the day, predictive coding was out for a long time before, you know, like the De Silva Moore ruling came out. And people were like, you know, this is going to be amazing. Everybody's going to accept it. But it took a court to really say, you can use this before anybody really accepted it. Do you think that's going to be the case here? Or do you think lawyers are going to dive in and just start using it?
Well, I'd actually take issue with your statement. 10 years after that court case, still only a small fraction of people are using it. Why is that? I think there are two simple reasons. One is the billable hour, and that'll be an issue that we'll have to address as well. The other is that it's more of a black box because you don't see the inputs or the outputs to TAR. It's a thing that happens, and it basically says, hey, we don't need to look at the rest of these documents when we always thought we had to look at them, and people get nervous about that. And they can't kind of figure out why, because there might be a million documents that you choose not to review because the statistics in the TAR system say you don't need to. But what's in there? Who knows? The other side wonders. Think of Gen AI as much more of an affirmative side. When it reviews a document and says it's relevant, it tells you why, and you can go check it. And when it reviews and says it's not, it tells you why as well. When you're doing an investigation and you ask about oxygen, we make sure it not only gives you an answer, but links to the original documents. And all you have to do is click, and boom, there in the records, it's talking about these cannulas of oxygen. So there's a difference. You see it immediately. You test it. You see it working. And I promise you, you stop looking at the links after a while. Although we always caution that if these are critical links, make sure you look at them.
But it does bring the question of legal implications. So what are the legal implications when it comes to Gen AI? When we're establishing liability for the actions or decisions made by Gen AI systems raising legal questions, I mean, what does that look like? What are your concerns with that? And what concerns should we have?
Well, I think you should have a whole lot less concerns than some people do. But let's start by saying that Gen AI is going to be applied to a broad range of things. And some of them, I'm sure you ought to have concerns about. There are issues like bias, using AI for hiring, that are totally legitimate. I don't mean to dismiss those. My focus is on a far narrower field, which is the $100 billion e-discovery market. And if Gen AI can make that more efficient and cost effective, that's a powerful thing and an important thing, because even for the legal system, Rule 1 of the Rules of Civil Procedure says these rules are dedicated or designed to bring about the swift, cost effective access to justice. And so these tools will make it discovery less expensive, happen more quickly, and promote access to justice. That's important. Now, what are the fears? Well, they don't promote access to billable hours, and that's a concern, and it's not new. The guilds have always been concerned, but I think you have to look at your use and talk about it. If you're a lawyer and you go to ChatGPT and ask for cases helpful to your case, you better check to make sure they're real cases, because there are issues with hallucinations using the general ChatGPT. That's why we always have links to our underlying documents. You read the cases, you read the underlying data. So like everything else, these tools have to be properly used, but when they are, we never go back. I dare say, I don't know if you have a Garmin anymore, but you're using your phone and you probably haven't printed out a MapQuest set of directions in quite a bit.
So the one of the other challenges we hear, obviously, with this is the computational power issues, right? I mean, it takes a lot of machines. It takes a lot of data to really like train the models and to really keep it going. Are you worried about this is really only going to be used by the super rich or the major law firms who can afford this kind of power?
It's just the opposite, man. We live in an era where there are so few barriers to people succeeding on their initiative and their ideas that it's almost scary. Think about 100 years ago when you wanted to build a steel plant and you needed land and millions of dollars just to get in the game. I've built a company with over 30 people now. We don't own a thing. We don't own a computer, a server. I have access to an unlimited amount of computing power for pennies. Now, the mistake people make is thinking this old-time thinking of, well, we got to build our own LLM. That'll cost millions of dollars. We're stuck. You're crazy if you build your own LLM. There are public models that give us access to this incredible power with dedicated teams running them, and I can get it for pennies. Think about AWS, where all our servers live. I don't have a data center. I don't have computers to worry about or teams of people to run them. They're all there right at my demand. And I can build a company, maybe a $1 billion company one day on nothing, next to nothing. That's what makes this time so exciting.
What about the, you know, the issue? Obviously, you mentioned hallucinations. How do we deal with the biases? How do we deal with like the deep fakes and all we're going to have to be coming across and dealing with in these type of tools?
Well, you're covering a wide ground when you link up hallucinations and deep fakes. Mm-hmm. So let's push deep fakes out of this talk because they are scary, serious, and I am worried about our country's democracy because of all the lies that are being spread, not just by AI, but by social media. We're not going to get there. When you talk hallucinations, you have lawyers all worried about security. That can be addressed through better understanding. While I don't claim to know everything about hallucinations in general, these come about with things like ChatGPT, where you're asking the brain for information. And the thing to understand is the brain is trained on trillions of bits of info, but there's always a stopping point, a cutoff. And at that point, that brain is locked away. We call it a brain in a jar. Can't learn anything, can't remember anything. It's just got its training. They have found that when you ask questions of the brain that it doesn't know the answer to, it sometimes fibs and makes things up. And so you have to be aware that if you're asking general questions to the brain, you better check out the answers. You better make sure there's a case before you cite it to the court. We don't work off the general brain. We use an intermediary. It's our software we've written that can present the information we want analyzed, the emails, the documents, all that text. Remember what I said about the whiteboard? We load it all up on the whiteboard and we tell the brain, we want you to analyze the stuff we put up and answer our questions. But don't use any of your knowledge. And if you can't answer it based on what we've given you, say so. And I will tell you, we don't see hallucinations. It's difficult to prove a negative. Experience will tell us, but that's exactly what we're seeing with the other research and the papers that I read every day, that if you limit the brain to analyzing a set of materials, it doesn't seem to hallucinate. And this is what Bing does. When you ask Bing a question, GPT that's built into Bing now, you may notice that the first thing it does is run a little search, and it's out using search techniques to find some documents that it thinks are relevant. It then presents those very quickly to the brain, says, read these and base your answer on them. That's how it knows things that have happened after its training cut off. And so, like any tool, you've got to be careful to understand enough of the basics to use it safely. That's true with knives too, by the way. Don't be juggling them. Might look good. Not a good idea. And definitely don't move up to juggling chainsaws unless you've really practiced.
John, you've been great. Definitely given a new outlook to eDiscovery, Gen AI combo pack there. I think there's a lot for everybody to unpack today. I think this was definitely one of those episodes that you didn't really know what we were going to get you to, and then you learned more than you expected. And as somebody who loves technology, whew, loved the episode. You've been great today. Before I let you go, one last question. I just want to know what's coming next. You know, what developments do you foresee in the future of eDiscovery, whether it's software or other, especially with the continued advancement of AI technologies? What does that look like?
Well, this could be a little self-serving, and I won't pretend to know what so many others out there, entrepreneurs, what have you, might be cooking up. It'll be stuff that I can't imagine. But I will tell you, we're in the middle of building Gen 2 of our generative integrated AI system. And Gen 2 combines a lot of different kinds of AI, and it will allow you to load tens, hundreds of thousands, millions of documents into the system and ask questions of it. Not because I've changed the architecture of Gen AI, it still has its limits, but because we've built, using a combination of AI, tools that will instantly search across these volumes of data to pull back chunks of the data that are likely and most likely to be relevant. So we can throw that up in front of the Gen AI, not just five or six documents, but hundreds, thousands of summarized documents, and let it answer questions. Think about a world where all the chat messaging can be loaded up and you just ask questions. This is coming for us in the next two sprints. We put out a new build every 2 weeks, and I think all the specs are written. It's working in the lab, but it's going to change how we interact with documents, not just for eDiscovery, medical records, any kind of knowledge base, because we chunk up the documents into little sections now, summarizing those and being able to work with them. Financial. I can't even imagine where it's going to go. But that alone, and it'll all tie into review.
So, John, you're blowing all our minds. And my mind is so blown, I don't think I'm going to be able to put it back together right now. John, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. Again, I said I'd try to make it fun and blow your minds, and I hope I did.
So, Kevin, we just talked to John Trajanic, the founder and CEO of Merlin Search Technologies. What are your tech takeaways?
I thought this was interesting. You know, again, it's one of those things, we talk a lot about Gen AI on this pod, and so I'm excited when we get to talk about it in eDiscovery, which is obviously my background. You know, this is one of those things, it's kind of a strange situation. A lot of other, you know, players in our space are in the wait and see mode, trying to figure out like what they're going to do. You know, is this really a thing we need type of thing? But Merlin is just out there. They are, you know, one of the first to market. And I thought this is interesting. You know, it's almost to the point where they're basically solving, you know, the review problem, as he mentioned on the pod. It's really kind of an interesting situation. I do think this is kind of fascinating. And at the same time, it's almost like he's put together a solution for a problem that isn't really a thing just yet, even as he mentioned, right? He's talking about the fact that we got people who are worried about the billable hour. And to a certain degree, he's improving this technology, you know, the process of document review so fast and so far, to the point where he's almost going to put some of these massive companies out of business. And I'm curious to kind of see how this goes down the future. I think it's interesting. What about you? What are your tech takeaways?
I agree with you to an extent. I'm always interested in talking about technology and AI. Obviously, Gen AI is the hot thing on the market right now. But I'm not always interested in talking about document review. As everyone knows, although my background is definitely both cyber and e-discovery focused, document review and e-discovery as a whole is a tough subject because it's not exciting for everyone. And the one thing I want to say about John is he's excited about it. Unlike a lot of us out there who
for
are
sure.
just
and
like,
and you could feel his passion.
Yeah, you know, we're kind of like, I don't know, documents, you got to review them. Whereas Kevin and I got a full demo of Sherlock, which is Merlin Search Technologies platform where they're doing the Gen AI within the document review sector, all around eDiscovery, all the exciting stuff. And when John is showing these demos, for those of you out there who are like, it's a demo, he's so passionate. And again, this is a guy who sold his company for what was it, Kev? Like $75 million?
$75 million. I mean,
$75 million.
How is he not just laying on a beach somewhere? I mean, most people are like, I'm never
working
again.
I'd be in Portugal on a beach, living life, right. And instead, the man has so much passion that he's still coming out, putting that energy into this because he truly believes this is where it's at and this is where he needs to be. And that, to me, in and of itself, is enough to have intrigue. Because there's so many of these companies that are out here just to make money. And I don't think that's John. I think John is saying this is just something that is changing the world in a way where he really believes. And I think it's a weird thing to say document review is changing the world. But in a lot of ways, I think he's not wrong in his passion and what he's doing. And it's awesome and it's exciting. And I'm happy to see it and to see what the future holds with it. So definitely, everybody, if you're listening, you should check out Merlin Search Technologies. Check out John Trajanic, everything he's doing. Read all 8 of his books. This episode, guess who it's sponsored by? I'm not going to tell you. You can figure it out. But we're big fans, and we think you should be as well. If you want to learn more about John, about his company, about his software, or us, reach out to us at contact@thattechpod.com. Head on over to www.thattechpod.com. Enter your email to subscribe. Check out some stuff that we're doing. Let us know who you want to hear from, what you want to see. If you want to hire us for any events, we are filling up quickly, but we are attending a lot of conferences and happy to meet you there. Please don't be a stranger. Reach out to us. We love to hear from you. We're also on social media. We are on LinkedIn/thattechpod and a few other platforms that I really couldn't tell you about. Kevin, is there anything else our listeners could do?
Absolutely. Go to wherever you get your pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever, and leave us a rating, leave us a review, let us know how we're doing. All that stuff helps us with the algorithms and gets us out there, which in turn is just good for us and good for you. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.